Welcome to Harmonia. I'm Angela Mariani, inviting you to join me for the next hour as today's performers of medieval, Renaissance, and Baroque music bring to life the music of the distant past. This hour on Harmonia, we're donning our party hats and pulling out the balloons and streamers to celebrate our 25th birthday. The very first episode of Harmonia aired on WFIU on October 10th, 1991, and we've been bringing you the best of medieval, Renaissance, and Baroque music ever since. We heard Henry Purcell's Strike the Viol, performed by the Early Music Consort of London under the direction of David Munro. This hour on Harmonia, we're celebrating a very important birthday, ours. The very first episode of Harmonia aired on October 10th, 1991, and the theme was the Cantigas de Santa Maria. We're taking a trip down memory lane this week and listening back to material from some of our earliest episodes. Every 10th cantiga in Alfonso's collection is a song of praise. The others are stories of miracles performed by the Virgin Mary. All are in the Galician language, which is a forerunner of Portuguese. In this cantiga, one of the best known, Mary gives a faithful monk a glimpse of what awaits him in paradise. He sits in a garden, enraptured by the beautiful song of a bird. When he returns to his monastery, the building is gone, and a new one is there in its place. He's confused, frightened. He asks the strangers there where he might find his brothers. Eventually, they realize that in the faithful monk's moment of bliss, 300 years have passed.
Antes que saia daqui.
That was the Studio der Frauenmusik under the direction of Thomas Binkley. The singer was Andrea von Rahm. The Studio der Frauenmusik was a pioneering ensemble in the area of historical performance, especially well known in the area of medieval repertoire. We heard the cantiga called Kena Virgen. You're listening to an hour of early music on Harmonia. I'm Angela Mariani, and tonight's program is dedicated to the 13th century Cantigas de Santa Maria. An excerpt from the very first episode of Harmonia, broadcast on October 10th, 1991. We're wishing the very happiest of birthdays to Harmonia as we listen back to material from some of our very first episodes on this special birthday edition. You can become a fan of Harmonia Early Music on Facebook or follow our updates all week long on Twitter. Just search for Harmonia Early Music. Harmonia began in Bloomington in 1991, but our national syndication began in 1995, with more than 80 stations signing on in the first week alone. I remember putting together one of the first rounds of press kits, together with Carrie Boyce, WFIU's marketing director at the time and now president and general manager of Spokane Public Radio, Christina Kuzmich, then the station manager of WFIU and now general manager of Wyoming Public Radio, and a number of courageous volunteers. We worked late into the night for several days. We're still getting the glue from the glue sticks out of our hair. By 2000, the show was being carried by more than 150 stations nationwide. The element of improvisation figures strongly in the performance of medieval music for both singers and instrumentalists. I asked Thomas Binkley to talk about that process.
Improvisation is a word it's a convenient word, but it's not the word that I like to use with regard to this music. Improvisation implies right off the top of the head, instant composition. That can occur if a musician is creative and has models to follow and has followed the models. I think of a good example is recorded in Lord's book, The Singing of Tales, in which he listened to a Yugoslavian husla player explaining how he learned to play the husla and to sing songs. And he said that, well, first of all, he listened to the men sing, and then when he was by himself, he would practice what he heard them sing, and he would play the notes on the husla, and when he was able to do it very well, then he would sing for other people. And that was the way he progressed. In other words, you have a model, you imitate it, and gradually you impress upon that model your own deviation or your own musical personality. And that's pretty much how we've worked. Of course, getting the model, that's the thing. At the time that we began doing this, there were no models to follow, and we had to search out models. We would make up models according to sort of rules. We would say, well, all right, there are other places in the world where monophonic music is played. And so let's see how they work out accompaniments. I think maybe I should say at this point for your audience that we're dealing with music in which the vocal line is written out, but the accompaniments are not written out. And the accompaniments often expand a piece by using a different accompaniment for every strophe, since the text is different, by having preludes and interludes and postludes. In other words, a lot of framing of a composition, so that just a few lines in the manuscript might become a 20-minute performance.
And even a lot of the instrumental music that we're hearing in the manuscript is one line of melody.
That's right. That's right.
Now facer nobre esclavir. E chi de fort fosir, mo vol colter bocciar, ganol cut afilar, in un mo sembeli, che c'è saiga de vino, fez che osa o mangiar, no se mo desalzar, e fez este venir, dai gacherans, poi svi per me es grazir. Sottil che sapzone fiar, non metta castia, ti fortunata lì, ma su un po' credes lì che non può scudar, a me scrivo a portar, chi non sapesse dir, con te entre trans, di quei coma a partir. E chi din so cortivo non lo può forzar, se vara da aiutar, pues non fai maschen ri, florare che scastigli, che per soldi va, lo scasco a me fai va, canteo sui candesir, lo calenans, ti li lai sa venir. E chi già per un fil, ben prez consola mar, greu cuore puoi strovar, si srompi per lì, capau che non trai, non son li ricavar, hai si coste grazzar, e eser revenir, plezebo vans, e gioi sen van fugir. Ma soi triunde mi, però non l'aus tomar, per paor de incusar, che dreis es loco e si, poi del sera mattino potre meliorar, ti già presso par, non l'aus i rentri dir, chi slova sans, no esca presto dormir. E si il fac son gentil alla volo levar, ai si spano e guidar, com senza alla fi, che lo sa risperi, che c'è sa niente inzar, no te o meno zar, e so ben escremir, mi per cox grans, che prez ben avvenir. Era con en un il, mas mo del señor char, en als non sai contar, mas que sa mors mal si, hai plus mal mas se si, o cam sau ben virar, que raro pas pasar, as treba le consigir, si que mos chans, es ya preste de mi.
That was the Studio de Frauenmusik under the direction of Thomas Binkley from the record Chansons de Troubadour, a piece by Guiraud de Bournay entitled Les Chansonnettes de Ville. The element of improvisation, or more correctly, invention, is present both in the way a performer chooses to create an arrangement of a song or of a purely instrumental piece. Even the medieval music specifically meant for instruments, dance songs for instance, are preserved only as a single melody. Binkley talked about this aspect of the music.
Now, there's a good argument for the music being represented as a single line in a manuscript rather than as in a score, as in the case of, let's say, modern symphonic repertoire. And that is that the modern symphonic score specifies the instruments normally in score order, so you have the high instruments at the top, the low instruments at the bottom, and you know which ones they are because they're named. Here are the horns, here's the oboe, the flute, violin, so forth. They're specified. And so you can write specific notes for those instruments. But we're dealing with a music in which there was no specification for the instruments because that was not a relevant issue. An instrument could be just as well accompanied by this instrument as with that, but the accompaniment would be different. The part that wasn't different was the text and its melody. So that's the part that was notated. In the case of instrumental music, the melody was the unchangeable part, but whether you played it on this instrument or that instrument would greatly change its sound picture. A piece could be played on a single instrument or many instruments, and every instrument had the obligation to make itself necessary to impress its own instrumental personality on the composition, and it's the the hearing of the same melody done in different ways all at the same time, that was a source of pleasure. I think there is a similar response to monophonic instrumental music or vocal music in many parts of the world. I'm thinking now of in the 1930s there was a radio what would I call this? The radio in Morocco invited many musicians for a kind of a festival, and one of the events of the festival was to have all of these musicians play a piece together. Now this is a music that is frequently played by 3 or 4 musicians, now being played by 70 or 80 musicians. And I've spoken to musicians that were there who have assured me that this was, of course, the grandest performance of all. This was the sort of thing that one would live a lifetime to be able to experience, simply because no two people played the same thing. Well, in the case of improvisation, the idea is not to impress an audience with the fluency of one's playing. Rather, the idea is to find a union of melody with instrument. What can this instrument play that it wants to play with this sort of a melody that really best suits it? And that combined with the particular instrumental technique that this particular player may have. In the Middle Ages, the playing of instruments was not schooled as it is today, with only 2 or 3 violin schools in the whole world. Everybody played, well, you play the Russian way, or it plays this way or that way. That isn't the way things were. They were highly individual in terms of technique, and sometimes they were somewhat regional in their musical instincts. So that a German lutenist wouldn't play like an Italian lutenist, but nor would two lutenists, let's say, from Nuremberg, play quite the same way. So that finding one's own way was as important then as it is now. So the one test that we don't, that we have to make, that they did not have to make, is we have this question of historical credibility. And that's important in improvisation. It is also important in any other musical decisions when we're playing music. They didn't have to ask, is this the way it was done? We do ask that question, and I'm afraid we get very many conflicting answers if you quiz people around the world that are involved with this profession.
players who've had experience with other kinds of improvisatory music have an advantage when they come to approach medieval music or early music in general?
Well, they certainly do initially, because they know how to go directly from thought to sound. Talented musicians, I'm thinking now particularly of instrumentalists, who are well trained in reading music, have to untrain themselves. They have to lose their faith. I stress in my teaching the deviation from the score as being something valuable. If you play it the way it's written, it's wrong. And you have to get away from that, and that is something a well-trained modern musician is somewhat reluctant to do. A folk musician or a jazz-trained musician, of course, knows that right from the beginning. So you do have a little bit of a head start there. Mm-hmm. A question of taste and historical credibility, that's another matter.
Listening back to material for some of our earliest episodes this week on Harmonia as we celebrate 25 years. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Harmonia, a program of early music that comes to you from the studios of WFIU at Indiana University. Partial support for Harmonia comes from Penco Incorporated of Bedford, Indiana. Partial support also comes from Early Music America, fostering the performance, scholarship, and community of early music on the web at earlymusicamerica.org. I'm Angela Mariani. In 1991, I was incredibly excited about the prospect of creating an early music radio program. I remember telling Thomas Binkley at the Early Music Institute that I had been given this opportunity, but that I was worried about juggling the radio show with my graduate studies. He was very enthusiastic, and I remember vividly what he said to me. Do it. You should just do it. You never know where it might lead. Never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that it would still be running 25 years later, or that it would have reached such a wide audience. I'm incredibly grateful not only to WFIU for giving me the opportunity, but also to the many listeners who have faithfully supported the show for all these years. This week on Harmonia, the music of the women troubadours, known in their own language as the Trobarites. The cold weather has arrived now. Frost, snow, wind. The birds are quiet. They do not wish to sing. The branches are brown. The leaves and flowers do not grow. The nightingale who wakes me when the month of May is here sings no more.
Chantamus safrania, e sun sec gli rampe splais, che flus ni foglia noi nais, ni rusignols noi crida, che l'ane mai medesina.
the words of the troubadour Azalaïs de Porcarrage, who lived in Provence in the 12th century, one of the troubadour poems known to have issued from the pen, or the mouth, of a woman. The original Provençal was spoken by Jean-Luc Madier over a prelude created by harpist Cheryl Fulton, played by Fulton and viol player Shira Kamen. Most people have heard of the troubadours. The very word now evokes images of wandering bards carrying a variety of lutes, harps, or unfamiliar bowed instruments. But this romanticized image, while highly enjoyable, isn't exactly correct, and in fact applies more to the musicians for hire who were called jongleurs or juglars. The troubadours, as a rule, came from the aristocracy, and not all of them wandered by any means. Their poetry and music were court entertainment, performed for an educated and fairly sophisticated audience. And apropos of this particular edition of Harmonia, not all of them were men. Let me slip in a bit of historical background here. The troubadours came from the south of France, which was culturally more sophisticated than its northern counterpart. Influences from many different surrounding cultures made their way to Provence. To the east, there was Italy. To the west, Arabic Spain. Now, scholars have had many a debate over the influence of Arabic Spain on the culture of the troubadours, but both Jews and Muslims from Andalusia did settle in southern France at that time. There was a colony of Muslims in Montpellier who were known to give lessons in Moorish song and music, and as a matter of fact, it was considered a status symbol among Provençal nobles to keep a troupe of Moorish singers at court. Suffice it to say that there were many rich poetic and musical influences swirling around. This next piece is a tenso, or dialogue, between the Trobarits Garcenda, Countess of Provence, and the troubadour Guy de Cavaillon. Garcenda was the wife of Alfonso II, brother of the King of Aragon. Guy de Cavaillon's vida, or biography, says he was in love with her. The dialogue is basically this. Garcenda says, "Hey, Guy, you seem very well suited as a lover. What are you waiting for? Speak up." And he replies that he's quite intimidated by her social rank, and that doing good deeds on her behalf should tell her as much as words would. These dialogues were often set to a pre-existing tune. In this case, the melody is by the troubadour Gaussin Faidit.
Thank you.
Hesperion 20 performed a tenso, or dialogue, between the troubadours Garcenda, Countess of Provence, and Guy de Cavaillon. The singers were Montserrat Figueras and Joseph Benet.
We've been celebrating our 25th birthday this week on Harmonia by listening back to material from some of our earliest episodes. Whether this is your first time hearing Harmonia or you've been with us for 25 years, thanks for listening. You can find hundreds of archived episodes, playlists, and podcasts online at harmoniaearlymusic.org. On our featured release this week, we're returning to the music of an ensemble that's been featured on Harmonia many, many times over the years, David Monroe's pioneering group, the Early Music Consort of London. The ensemble's recording of two of the handful of birthday odes that Henry Purcell wrote for Queen Mary was first released in 1976, 15 years before Harmonia made its 1991 debut, which we're celebrating on this special birthday edition of Harmonia. We heard music from Come Ye Sons of Art, Henry Purcell's 1694 birthday ode for Queen Mary, performed by singers and instrumentalists of the Early Music Consort of London under the direction of David Munro. Learn more about recent early music releases on the Harmonia Early Music Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes or at harmoniaearlymusic.org. Harmonia is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. Additional resources come from the William and Gail Cook Music Library at the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. We welcome your thoughts about any part of this program or about early music in general. You can leave a comment or question anytime by visiting harmoniaearlymusic.org and clicking on Contact. The writers for this edition of Harmonia were Elizabeth Clark and Angela Mariani. Thanks to our studio engineer, Michael Pashkash, and our staff, Janelle Davis and Luann Johnson. Additional technical support comes from KTTZ at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. Our producer is Elizabeth Clark, our executive producer is John Bailey, and I'm Angela Mariani, inviting you to join us again for the next edition of Harmonia.